Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Now, a year after revealing her alopecia diagnosis, British TV presenter Melanie Sykes shared a photo of her head showing the extent of her hair loss. And the autoimmune disease, which causes patchy hair loss predominantly on the scalp, it can have a real impact for many people living with alopecia. And Claire Fulham is with me in studio today. Claire is the owner of Druid Trichology Clinic. Claire, you're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for joining us. You really found your own true self, didn't you, as a result of your diagnosis? Can you maybe bring us back and tell us when this first started for you?
Yeah, so I lost 90% of my hair 10 years ago now, which is hard to believe. And I lost 90% in 5 weeks. So I was always, you know, Claire with the red hair, you know, so that's the way people describe me. So then to not have it, you know, 5 weeks later had a huge emotional, physical impact on my life, of course. But you're right, like Jay, like I suppose I saw myself for the first time actually when I had no hair, you know. Now I have loads of hair here, hair coming out my eyeballs now at this stage. So that type of hair loss, alopecia areata, you know, we can recover it somewhat in some cases, but God, it had a absolutely profound, you know, impact on my life. I reached to social media, tried to kind of build an audience to get a bit of strength from it, and literally was talking to anyone who would have me to try and figure out what was wrong, you know. And really, to be honest, maybe that was 10 years ago now, like maybe only over the past 3 to 5 years have I kind of figured out what triggered it for me and kind of how to help it. But I spend my days now looking after people with hair loss. It's a pleasure, you know, so to kind of take something that was so, had such a negative impact on my life and I suppose turn that around a little bit and try and help others is a nice way to live.
It's a lovely thing to do, actually. Yeah, and even I suppose to help maybe others get a better understanding as well. When you think back, even, you know, prior to your diagnosis, Claire, how did it, like, what were the kind of signs and symptoms of this? What was the starting point of this?
Yeah, so a lot of people will shed hair kind of before the summertime. We're like kind of cats and dogs, like we get rid of that winter coat. So I'd always be somebody that would shed a lot of hair around that time. So it was May 2016. So I thought, this is all it is. And then I saw a tiny little bald spot on the split of my hair one day before for work. And went into work and asked a couple of the Elwins in work, what's the story with that? I was like, what's going on up there? And actually one of them said, it's alopecia. And I was like, ah, stop, would you go away? Like, that's, it can't be. And then I was kind of putting two and two together. I was like, I am losing a lot of hair at the moment. Maybe I should go to the GP. So went down to the GP and they said, Claire, there's 5 big patches on your scalp and there's nothing you can do. You know, so very quickly.
And that's really frightening, isn't it? You know,
like, frightening. So frightening. Like, I was 27 at the time. Like, and again, my hair was probably one of the biggest physical characteristics I had, you know. And I was like, no, like, there was just such doom, you know, there's nothing you can do. Went to a trichologist, went to a dermatologist. And had all the conversations and nobody actually took the time to explain why this was happening to my body, you know. And I suppose that's what's led me to what I do now. I don't let someone leave without kind of an understanding of what's going on.
How did you get to the bottom of it?
I it's taken me years.
Yeah.
I mean, my hair started to grow back a year after, you know. Now it grew back, you know, white, grey, black. There wasn't a sniff of red off it anymore, but I didn't care, it was hair. And really, I suppose, over the years, I've tried to understand what triggered this autoimmune condition, because that's what this type of alopecia is. It's autoimmune related. What triggered it, you know? And I suppose I was a young mother. I was trying to pay a big mortgage that I couldn't afford. I was trying to keep all these plates spinning. And I think when people go through extreme stress, they're looking for that extremity, you know, of that, like, you know, the death or the grief or the job loss or, you know, something extreme. But actually, that low level stress that happens to all of us, it's a killer. It can be a killer, absolutely. You know, and it can set off those autoimmune triggers 100%. So definitely I've worked on that over the years. I deal with my stress a little bit better. I still get patches though, you know, like I get, it's like a psoriasis. It lives within the body. So I still get patches from time to time. But again, I've learned how to deal with that stress better.
It's more about managing it rather than, I suppose, you can't really get rid of it completely. It's always liable to kind of erupt.
Absolutely. Yeah always liable. So it kind of lies there dormant in the body. And an element of stress will take over and I'll get a patch of alopecia or I'll lose a significant amount of hair, you know.
You've gone back, you've retrained. Now, mm-hmm. so you run your own trichology clinic.
Yeah.
Druid Trichology. So, I mean, you're basically the kind of the dermatologist for the scalp.
That's it. Like, dermatologists will look after the top of your head all the way down to your toes, whereas yeah. we just look after your head. So beard, eyelashes, eyebrows, you know, scalps from psoriasis to dandruff to hair loss, you know. So trichology is a great source of information for people in terms of what's going on with their scalp. And I always say to people, you don't have to have hair loss to look after your scalp, you know. Trying to be proactive about it the way we are with our skin is so important, you know. So yeah, and as I said, it's a pleasure from something that really changed my life in a negative capacity to now kind of be that kind of person that listens to people. Because I think that was a big thing for me. Nobody really was listening to what I was saying, you know, or they damp, you know, oh, could be worse. It could be worse. And of course it could be worse, but everything's relative yeah, to that person at that time. It's not helpful, you know.
So, more kind of great helpful advice.
Yeah,
you don't need. Why don't we look after our scalps better? You know, when you think about it, like we're all great at pumping everything and anything into our face and mm-hmm. our skin and moisturising from a young age.
Yeah, I suppose like it's just a really like unsexy thing to do, isn't it? Like I think skincare has had its moment over the past 20 years, but what I'm delighted about is scalp care is about to. We can see that yeah. change in the industry that people are starting to look after their scalps. Like we've been flogging this horse now for 6 years, you know, yeah. and trying to make people understand that that's where your hair grows from, and spending loads of money on your hair doesn't always answer those questions, you know, that's cosmetic. So what are we going to do to the scalp to keep our hair gorgeous as long as we can? You know,
Quelfin Ní Chuilig is with us here too, Claire, today on the line. 1800 453 106 is the number, because you're an alopecia advocate, Quelfin. You've been sharing this online as well.
Yeah, so fairly recently, and I would know Claire, and like that, I it's been about 10 to 11 years with hair loss now, and I can relate to feeling like I was identified by my hair. I had long curly hair. And then, yeah, when I was 15, I noticed my first patch. And I think being a teenager, it struck me to a point where I was trying to hide it for a long time. And only recently in the last couple of years have I kind of fully embraced it. Because unfortunately for me, I've continued to have alopecia areata for the last 11 years. And it's progressed to now only having about 5 to 10% of my hair on my head at one time. So when I hit that 10-year mark, I decided, you know what, I've lived with it for so long. Yeah. I've had such a developing relationship with it. And I'm finally at this stage where I feel like I can offer advice, support, but also just visibility for the condition. And that's what kind of sparked then kind of taking to social media, sharing my story. Didn't know if anyone was going to need it, want it, but it seems to be really helping a lot of people.
What reaction did you get when you started to share it online?
It incredible. Like it was just, I felt seen. And then that's how I was being approached. People were messaging me saying, I haven't seen anyone with that type of hair loss before. Is this what I have? I think this is what I have. Seeing you has helped me feel like I'm not alone in this. Because I think a lot of women try and hide it. And I think that's almost worse. You know, you're putting extra stress on yourself, thinking that you have to manage this yourself and find answers and find treatments and cures. And for me, I'm kind of just someone who shows it as it is. I'm very unapologetically myself. And I think it's refreshing. It's refreshing to see someone just not try and hide it and to show a different type of hair loss as well. Because it is quite extreme what I have.
Really, yeah. And when you say when just kind of 5 to 10%, Quelfin, you know, of your original hair, like, do you manage that then?
I just keep it shaved. Yeah. I honestly keep it all shaved, because when one patch will start to grow back, another will kind of fall out. So I call it my world map, like my head map, because it kind of looks like countries sometimes when I let it grow out. And when I have more hair, it kind of looks like that. But I mainly just keep it shaved, because it's there's no way I can get away with having hair.
The listener here, listening to you both, to Claire and Quelfin today, has got in touch to say, I have alopecia, is it totalis, for the last 35 years. And at this stage, I just like to wear nice wigs
yeah.
and get on with it.
Yeah. there's so many people who manage it. Like, I've met Quelfin, I've seen her beautiful scalp, yeah. You know, and I think there's such advocates for, like, you don't need your hair to live your life. But I think you come to a point where you have to either accept that or let it control the negative aspects of your life, or like Quelfin's bravely doing, and that lovely lady as well, like, kind of embracing it and going, do you know what, I'm not going to let this define me. Because when you lose your hair or you physically change in some way, thank God we still have that worth of, our family still love us, or, you know, we're still the same people. It's just, I think society starts to treat us in a different way, you know, and I think it's not easier for men, but society has made it easier for men than it is for women, definitely, you know.
Is there still, Quelfin, do you feel, is there still maybe that taboo that Claire is talking about?
Oh, definitely. And like that, being viewed slightly differently. Like, that's why I think I feel comfortable wearing my wig. I just feel like I get less stares. I don't need to explain myself as much. But I also wear it because that's how I identify with my feminine side. That's how I feel like my old self. So it's something I kind of, it's a tit for tat kind of relationship. Like, I take off my wig when I go home, but I suppose my external personality, I'll always have a wig on and I'm always changing it. And that's, I think, a great thing about wigs. And like that lady who got in touch, wigs have really come on in the last couple of years.
Haven't they? God, they're unbelievable, they're, some of them.
Unbelievable. So realistic nowadays. So I feel comfortable with that. But yeah, I think people think that wigs look like costume wigs. And I think that's what they're almost scared of. And they're like, oh my God, you're wearing a wig.
It's not the Irish dancing headpiece we might have had 20 years ago. I mean, some of them are just, they're absolutely, absolutely super. Listener here's got in touch to say, after my mum passed away, I had some big round bald patches at the back of my head. My GP sat me down and said she felt that it might actually be grief and said that we'll keep an eye on it and to be gentle to myself. She was right, because it did. It actually did grow back, says this listener. Kate Lee is with us here too, Quelfin and Claire. You might tell us, Kate, about your own experience.
Good afternoon, Andrea.
How are you?
Thank you so much for having me on this afternoon. Yeah, so my experience is a bit similar to the story of grief, really. I'm 28 now. When I was 7, I had lost my grandmother, and I was very close to her. I lived with her. And after that, I was diagnosed with alopecia around Valentine's Day. My birthday is the 24th. 10 days later, most of my hair had gone. I have alopecia universalis now, so that means that I don't have hair anywhere whatsoever.
Okay, and you were diagnosed, because your line just dipped there very slightly, Kate Lee. You were diagnosed at what age?
I was 7 years old.
7 years of age when you were diagnosed, yeah. And I'm sure, how was that as a young child?
Yeah, it was very difficult as a child to kind of process the grief of losing my grandmother, but also the grief of losing my hair. And I think that that was definitely something that triggered it at the time. But now that we know more, there was my grandmother, my great aunt also has alopecia. And now my mom has alopecia as well. What started off as areata for her has now progressed to totalis. Later in life for her. So we know it's part of my family medical history.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you that. Is there sort of rhyme or reason to this? You know, like, if one person in the family has it, does it mean that somebody else, you know, too could get it?
Yeah, not always. Yeah. Like, genetically, like a psoriasis, like a, you know, that kind of autoimmune, if that's the way your body processes stress, you know, whether that's grief, like Kate Lee there, if that's grief, if that's worry, if that's anxiety, you know, your body will process that a certain way. And we learn these things from our family, don't we? We learn how to bottle things up from our family and not maybe express ourselves. So we suppress a lot of that, and that can come out as an autoimmune reaction. You know,
so you got your diagnosis at 7, Kate Lee. How was that experience going through school then?
Yeah, so when I had lost my hair, I wore a bandana for a very long time. My first wig experience of wearing a wig, it was on my first Holy Communion. And at that time, wigs weren't great. It was a petite human-sized wig that I wore, and it was synthetic. I also have eczema, so that was quite itchy and not very pleasant. But fast forward, wigs have come on so much, like we were saying earlier on in slot. It's ironic that you're calling me today, because I actually have my hair trial for my wedding later on this afternoon.
Fantastic. And are you like in your, presume you'll, or will you wear a wig for that?
Yes, I wear human hair wig now, yeah.
And sure, God, between hair pieces and everything, I mean, the improvements over the years has been, you know, pretty unbelievable. You know, they're often, it's nearly very difficult to actually decipher whether they're, you know, the real hair or not, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think for medical grade wigs as well, the industry have realised that with people that have alopecia, they might have other autoimmune diseases like skin allergies and eczema, like I have. And the type of wigs that I wear are medical grade, so all of the fabrics and things that are made up with it are hyperallergenic, so it's easier and more comfortable to wear.
And like, there's so many different, you know, different forms, isn't there, of alopecia? Like, from listening to the three of you today,
there is. Yeah. So I have universalis, so it means that I have no hair. My mom has totalis, so it means that she doesn't have hair in her head. But previously in her life, she had areata. It's actually the menopause that has triggered her hair loss. She's only lost her hair the last 3 years.
Okay. Listener here has got in touch to ask, just in relation to listening to the three girls today on alopecia, my own son is losing the hair on the crown of his head. It's very upsetting for him. I'm wondering if there's anything that the girls might recommend or anyone, you know, you'd suggest he talk to.
I would definitely say, like, book an appointment with a trichologist if you can, you know. Like, when people tell you they're losing their hair, they are, right? Like, people know themselves when their hair is thinning, especially in the crown. That sounds like something called androgenetic alopecia. So when a young man starts to lose his hair, and men who are destined to lose their hair will start to lose it in their 20s. That's when their testosterone's at its height. The name is androgenetic alopecia. Androgen's is a hormone that's linked to testosterone. So really, like, doing something about it. Like, androgenetic alopecia is 93% of all hair loss in the world. We're all going to have androgenetic alopecia one day, really. So tackling it from a young age is a really, really good idea. We're not going to stop it in men, but we're going to be able to slow it down. So it does affect him. Of course it affects his life, you know. So doing something about it, being proactive.
What helped you, Kate Lee, over the years, you know, just even to kind of to deal with this?
I suppose the support from my parents definitely has been the most helpful overall. You know, they reared me to be a really resilient and perseverant person. My well-being was really looked after when I was a child. And when I was a teenager, the support of my friends and peers in school actually was quite healing.
Brilliant.
When I was in transition year, we did a project called Baldy Locks and the 29 Hairs, where we raised awareness for alopecia. And at the time, my peers really got behind me and wanted to support me, but also support other people with alopecia. So that was quite a pivotal time in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now also, like, the support of my fiance, alopecia is just part of our life now. It's no different than anyone else's life. So we just forget about it, really.
Quilfin, what maybe bit of advice would you have for listeners getting in touch that have maybe recently been diagnosed?
Definitely support. Like, beforehand, I found it very hard to manage my alopecia because I just didn't know anyone that had gone through the same experience. And that's why I went to social media. And from the outreach of that, I actually ended up starting my own little support group for women with hair loss. Now, we're hoping to branch out for men as well, because we're getting so many messages from mothers with kids with alopecia trying to look for resources. So that's now my new mission. My friend and myself have started the Hair Loss Haven, which run events, which run meetups for people with hair loss. That's how I got in contact with Claire, and she was at one of my events. And we're hoping to just be that community that can offer support and be that point of contact for someone who's at the beginning of their journey and just has all these questions and feels so overwhelmed, because you go and you research it online, and I think that's almost worse. You feel like it's going to take over your life. But really, when you start talking to people, you realise, you know, it is very manageable. And like, that support from your closest friends and closest circle really make the difference.
Well, I can see it here, even from the you know, the number of stories and messages coming in as well, Claire, today from listeners. This texter is wondering if we might just mention, is it frontal fibrosing alopecia?
Yeah.
Is there any cure to it, they're wondering?
There's not. It's a scarring type of alopecia, so it's a very, very difficult one. Frontal fibrosing goes from ear to ear, and you'll see normally the eyebrows go first, and then the hairline starts to step back quite significantly. It only steps back a certain amount, so I think a lot of worry is that the whole hair will go. It won't, but really really what's very important for FFA, we call it, is anti-inflammatory ingredients. So making sure you're adding anti-inflammatory foods to your diet, not taking away foods, but adding them. Also anti-inflammatory products as well on the scalp can really, really help kind of, I suppose, settle that inflammation. That's what it is.
What would that look like when you say anti-inflammatory products?
So ingredients, anti-dandruff shampoos have a lot of anti-inflammatory like products within them, ingredients in them to settle the scalp. But it's a really, really difficult one because it's a heartbreaker to tell someone that's what they're suffering with, you know.
A lot more questions, people looking for advice. We'll definitely come back to this again here in Ask the Expert, perhaps some Tuesday afternoon. For the moment, though, we'll leave it there. Claire, listen, thanks a million for sharing your story with us today. Claire Fulham there, who's the owner of the Druidricology Clinic, and also to Kate Lee and Quelfin Niquillig. Thanks so much for joining us. The email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.